Come with us down the rabbit hole.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
As we explore the odd and esoteric.
If my answers frighten you, then you should cease asking scary questions.
This is the AU Radio Underground Files.
Dead leaves rattle in the chilly autumn wind. The sun sinks below the horizon, leaving you in darkness. The summoning circle in your living room glows a faint red. Congratulations, mortal. You have successfully called forth the darkest beings to ever roam this earth. The dark mistress of the night, Joy! Hi, Joy.
I can't find my cat. Do you
have
my cat?
Two cats.
Ah, okay. Well, if you see mine, let me know.
Will do. The Archduke of the Depths. It's Hal.
Oh, I like that one. I'll need to remember that one.
The Lord of the Plains of Tech. It's Travis.
Is this Christmas Town?
Christmas Town? And I am the Principality of Stealing Your Food at Midnight. These are the Underground Files. And this week, we're talking about why you shouldn't whistle at night.
Why shouldn't you whistle at night?
Well, the general consensus is that, bad things will happen.
Invitation for bad luck or bad
Bad luck, spirits. Dark spirits. There's something about skinwalkers.
The devil.
So the answer, Travis, it just depends on who you ask.
I always heard it as
I've noticed
like an idiom like weeing in the wind.
Oh, I did see something about that in regards to like the actual phrase whistling in the dark in regard to like keeping up courage.
There's an idiom that's whistling in the graveyard, and the idiom is for basically keeping your chin up during dark situations or bad situations and stuff like that. But the general lore of everything is, no, don't actually whistle in graveyards because it invites angry spirits. It lets them know you're there and that you're alive, and they will be mad about it.
You gotta be mad about something, I guess.
Yeah, there's a Russian and Romanian proverb that says basically whistling indoors is like whistling or blowing your money away, so it's inviting poverty into your house. So they kind of have an opposite version of it. It's not such a big deal about whistling outside. It's more like whistling inside is problematic.
Huh.
Because in Latvia, if you whistle indoors, it can upset the house spirits, and if they leave, then your house will burn down.
Oh, fun.
Well, that's fun. Don't like that. I whistle a lot in my house.
Ugh. Yeah. That was really the only one I found that had a very definitive where you whistle matters as much as when you whistle.
Mm-hmm. There's a tradition in Hawaii that I am sorry to anybody who speaks the native languages of Hawaii because I can't do this. But hukapayo is a spirit, they're spirits of ancient warriors called the Night Marchers.
And oh, yeah.
If you whistle at night, it summons them, and then, like, well, they're ancient warriors, so...
They do what they do.
Not great times to be had by all, and apparently if you do accidentally meet up with them, don't look them in the eye and lay face down on the ground as a sign of respect so that they'll leave you alone.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I mean, I did see some stuff in regards to the UK and the Seven Whistlers, which was kind of cool.
That was really cool.
And which the seven, I saw it described as either birds or spirits that would, their song, their whistling would foretell either death or like huge catastrophes and such. There was apparently a large group of miners at one point that had been reported to have not gone to work one day because apparently they had heard whistling, and that superstition is hefty enough to have kept them from working at all that day for fear of like collapse in the mines or stuff like that. So that's fun.
Yeah, I saw that the like the fable that goes with that one is apparently. So I think the miners one specifically is that the whistlers were said to be basically the spirits of seven miners who got drunk on a Sunday and agreed to whistle after dark for a bet, and a whirlwind carried them away. And so now they kind of like the swan manes, they were turned into swifts, and that they have to fly forever as swifts, basically.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't find that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that was Lancashire. That's where that fable came from.
That's cool.
And that most of the fables I found for the Seven Whistlers are like around the Midlands of the UK. But I think it was Shropshire that they're considered to be souls that were doomed. There wasn't any reason given why they were doomed souls, but that six of them were flying around looking for the seventh. And when they found him, the world would end. But basically they were believed to be ones that cried out for death, similar to a banshee.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, it definitely seems to be more of a like a Midland thing there.
Yeah.
I didn't see quite as much. Like I heard a little bit about some stuff in like Wales, but that's about it.
Yeah. There seems to be like, I mean, there's enough spooky stuff in Celtic lore. I know that there were like a few brief mentions in Celtic lore of like how whistling could attract spirits, but it wasn't like specific. It was just bad spirits, basically.
Yeah.
Which seems to be, if there's not specific mythos about it, that seems to be the general feeling from everywhere, is whistling at night brings in bad things.
Just calls attention.
In the Navajo tradition, it is, they say don't whistle at night because it catches things' attention, but specifically, if you ever whistle at night and you hear a return whistle, you need to run.
Yeah.
There are several different types in both the Navajo and the Ojibwe tribes, several different kinds of spirits that can whistle back, and that's a big red flag that it is trying to get your attention and trying to get you to enter the forest or wherever it is that it is. Skinwalkers have been known to do it in Navajo tradition because they do mimic humans. Calls and stuff like that.
I hate everything about that so much.
Ugh. Oh yes, it's super spooky.
Just like trying to lure you away. Oh, I hate it.
You away into the night. And then of course there is the Turks who just believe that it will summon the devil.
Yeah. Yeah.
The devil.
Yeah, there was some similar stuff noted in Japanese like lore and stuff too, was whistling at night disturbs the quiet, and
oh yeah, yeah. And then that it brings danger to you. Yeah,
in Japanese lore, the tengu can get you if you whistle at night. They'll kidnap
yes.
you. They will come by and kidnap you, or it will summon a snake. That was also something.
Hmm.
Whistling at night can summon a snake, or a tengu can kidnap you. I'm like, wow. Either way.
Probably not.
No, they believe that it attracts snakes, thieves, and tengu. So you can get robbed, you can get kidnapped, or you have a close encounter with a snake. There's also in Southern American lore, like Mexico kind of specifically, the lechuza, I believe it is, it's L-E-C-H-U-Z-A, is a witch that can transform into an owl. And if you are outside whistling at night and you catch her attention, again, catching attention of things, she will swoop down and carry you away. And we all know that swooping is bad.
Yes. I thought it was pretty interesting that in China, they have some of the same beliefs as Japan, but they also have some Taoist beliefs that it's called Cheng Xiao. And it is basically long, drawn-out whistling that functions as a transcendental exercise. And it's believed to help achieve longevity. If you're really good at it, the masters of this practice were believed to be able to summon animals, communicate with the supernatural and gods, control weather, and relieve suffering. Unfortunately, the last master of the art was in the 3rd century, Sung Deng. And apparently, he decided to go off and be a hermit, and everyone who came and tried to learn from him, he just didn't teach.
Huh.
I'd heard a little bit about that. That one, I love how like they have some of the same beliefs as Japan in regards to that, but then there's also just this like wildly opposing, like, hey, we're over here, and it's like not a bad thing. It's fascinating to me.
That is, yeah. I really like the Inuit legends of whistling at night, specifically don't whistle at the northern lights, because they believed, the ancient Inuits believed that the northern lights were spirits.
Makes sense.
Up in the sky, traveling across the sky, that it was the paths that the spirits traveled. And so if you whistled at the northern lights, you would call the spirits down to you, and you ran the risk of them swooping you up and carrying you away into the northern lights prematurely before your time. And it was something that only like tribal elders and stuff would do to commune with the spirits, because they knew how to do it safely.
Interesting. That's neat.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I thought that was really neat.
So, and then of course, whistling on ships. I found out actually there were two things, and we talked about this a little bit with our ship superstitions previously. But of course, whistling on a ship while it's sailing is thought to cause the wind speed to increase, and it doesn't seem to matter whether it's day or night, but it's considered even more unlucky in the evening, apparently. And also, in some cases, it was taboo for anyone except for the cook to whistle on a ship, because it was associated with coded mutineer messages. The cook, however, could whistle because it meant as long as he was whistling, he wasn't stealing and eating the food.
I like it.
I mean, I suppose.
There is some, there is some stuff regarding whistling in like theaters and stuff as well. I'm not super savvy in regards to a lot of it.
Oh, but yeah, I know why that is. So it's because the rigging in theaters, it used to be done predominantly by sailors during off times. And so they would use the same. So most of the rigging in for like set changing and drapes and lights and all that are all, they're all called most of the same things that you call it on a ship. And so they would just use the same whistles to communicate raising and lowering things, including like flying people across the stage and things like that. So if you whistled backstage or on stage or something like that without it being part of the planned play itself, which most plays don't generally use much in the way of whistling, you could accidentally trigger the lowering of a boom, or they would drop the person that they're flying because they would think that it was one of the signals to raise or lower something.
That is so cool. And then it just got turned into a superstition.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we use radios now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because I remember being in theater, and the whole thing is like, you just don't whistle in the theater.
Yep.
And when you ask why, they're just like, it's bad luck. It's just bad luck. It's just bad luck. It's kind of like the Scottish play. It's just bad luck.
Yep.
Which is, I love the origins of superstitions. I think that they are so much fun to learn. So thank you, Joy. I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, that's the real reason behind why originally whistling wasn't allowed in theater.
That's super cool.
Because you get somebody murdered.
Because somebody will die. Carl, that kills people.
Also theater sailors. There was all that stuff with like, I read a thing a while ago talking about how it was a very common entertainment for pirates to put on mock trials, wherein like one person would have to argue that they weren't a pirate, and like that like half of it would be about proving or disproving that. And I think that's kind of amazing.
I love that much. I love that so much. And if that doesn't get brought up in our D&D pirate game, I'm gonna be so mad about it.
Right?
We need to do that at some point.
sorry, now I'm just laughing. I also find it really funny because we've talked about it before. I grew up in a very small rural mining town in Northern California. And this whole like don't whistle at night thing is so weird to me, because where I grew up, I was taught the complete opposite. Like, I was taught that whistling at night or whistling in cemeteries would actually scare away the bat, like, it would actually deter things from like supernatural things from approaching you. And I don't know where those wires got crossed, but I think it's really interesting because my whole life I've been told, like, you know, if you're ever feeling scared at night and, you know, you feel that prickle on the back of your neck, just whistle a tune while you're walking, you know, kind of thing. Or if you have to pass a cemetery, make sure you whistle while you walk past.
Local lore and stuff is so fascinating in that way.
Yeah.
Every like little tiny place like that really does have like a lore all its own.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
And now I'm beginning to think that maybe it was just my parents trying to get me to get snatched up by an angry ghost.
Well, and it might have also grown out of the, so there's a superstition about singing when you are going past a cemetery, because hymns and things like that are supposed to protect you. So it could have just evolved into whistling or making noise, because I know in a lot of like mountain towns and things like that, whistling at night is a thing because it's supposed to scare away animals. Basically, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, bear yeah. bells or whatever. So chances are, it probably is the singing hymns when you go past a cemetery, so you don't breathe in ghosts.
Yeah.
And it probably just morphed to making noise in general. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, I could see that. I could totally see that. I've been wondering like where it came from, and that makes the most sense, because I was like, we were a mining town and maybe it came from that, but like whistling in mines underground is super taboo also.
Yeah.
So, like, not that. but there were some beliefs among miners that whistling could dispel evil spirits.
Yeah.
You. So, there's that, like...
A lot of back and forth.
There's a lot of back and forth. Whistling underground was taboo because the vibrations... They were yeah. worried that too much noise could make the ground shift and collapse the mine.
Yeah.
Which, fair.
Well, and a lot of that I've noticed seems to be regional, because I've heard from some places that they've used things like whistling to communicate across mines before they had intercoms and walkie-talkies and things like that. And yeah. then I've also heard places where that's like, that's always, never been okay. Like, never, well, ever.
I would assume, too, that like a communication whistle, like a short, like, you know, whistle to let somebody know what's going on would be different than whistling a tune.
Probably, yeah, that's true.
Because, like, obviously whistling a tune is a long, sustained thing, whereas, you know, communication is just a couple sounds.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, guys, if you want a super brief tangent, there's a, I'm sad to say I don't remember the name of the language or the region it comes from specifically, but there was a linguistics class that I took at one point, and while we were discussing some of, like, the weirder languages out there that have really unique structure or, sound bases, things like that, there is a language that has an entire like secondary section of its language done entirely through whistling, because the people that the language developed with were primarily like herders who needed to be able to communicate over like very vast distances, and so they have like that their entire language can be communicated through whistling as well as through like more traditionally recognized speech. Super cool.
Thank you for that segue, Hal, and welcome to my rabbit hole. So while I was trying to find out the regional aspect of the whistling in mines, which I was unable to find. I couldn't find any definitive regional differentiation between yes and no. There's just too much conflicting information out there. What I did find, though, was whistling languages, and wow, there are a lot of them. But Canary Islands, La Gomera, is where you're talking about, Hal. And the language is called Silbo Gomero. And it's a transposition of Spanish from speech to whistling. And it is one of the easiest to understand whistling languages out there. But they can whistle. Basically, it's the language itself is understandable 3.1 miles away, 5 kilometers. So it's one of the there. So there were several other places. There's a Kuskoy in northern Turkey has a 400-year-old whistled language. It's known as the Turkish bird language. Their language their whistles travel further, but they only have about a 60% understandability because of the way it's whistled. And then there was another one, one of the Alaskan native tribes, but it's way up on the Russian end of towards Alaska, that also has, they use it for communication when they're whale hunting on boats.
And then there's also some from Greece as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a couple of tribes in Tibet too. Oh, and apparently one of the native groups in one of the Aboriginal tribes in Australia also has a whistled language, and they were used just like our Navajo code talkers during World War II.
Oh, that's super cool. I didn't know that.
And then there's a small village called San Pedro Xochipan in Mexico that also supplements some of their language with whistling.
That's cool.
It is. Most of these whistling languages are on the decline because the use of modern technology has decreased the need for them, which I think is super sad. I think that these traditions should absolutely be passed down because it's so sad that this is something that's being lost, because it is such a amazing linguistic phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Canary Islands one, Silbo Gomero, I'm never going to be able to say that right, it was on the decline from about the 60s through the 90s, but they teach it in school now. It is a required course in school. So that one is going to survive. And the one in the Turkish bird language actually has been, they're reviving it as well. So there are two of them that hopefully will survive.
That is really cool.
But it's kind of cool because it's kind of like the original Bardic language, effectively. It's a musical language.
Yeah, I'm really glad to see that there's been so much more focus by a lot of places on language conservation. Mm-hmm. I've been learning Irish for a couple of years now, and I'm really glad that there are as many resources for that now as there are, especially since for a while there really was the concern of that being lost entirely. It's nice to see that there's so much more focus on that.
It's not quite whistling related, but there is, and I forget what part of Scandinavia it's from, because Scandinavia is quite a large collection of countries, but there is a singing language that they use for cow herding in that country. Ooh. And it's basically because the hills are so vast that they echo really well. And so it's this specific type of call that they use that echoes very well. It's a very melodic call, and it brings the cows home.
Oh, cool.
And I have heard YouTube videos. Like, I've listened to YouTube videos, and it is haunting and beautiful. And it's specifically designed, like, it was created specifically for sheep herders and cow herders and those kinds of people. And it's the most beautiful art, like, ever.
I feel like I've heard about that before. I'm going to need to look that up again. Because, yeah, I feel like I've seen something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are videos for the two whistled languages, the Turkish bird language. There's a lot more for the one from the Canary Islands, because, again, they've been doing a lot more conservation. But both of them have some pretty cool YouTube videos.
And if I remember correctly, when I was in my anthropology class, there are quite a few more cultures around the globe that use, they're not quite fully developed whistling languages, but they use whistling as a means of communication. And it's usually in places where the tribes are remote, they're far flung from each other, they need sounds that can carry to communicate with each other kind of stuff. And it has been dying out as humans have become more populous and technology makes it easier for us to communicate with each other. So they think that there was a lot more prevalence of this kind of communication before, and it has just unfortunately been lost to us over time.
Yeah, I know there's a language, a whistling language for Tibet too, but I couldn't find nearly as much on it. And I know that there are some African ones as well.
Well, and that was something that was interesting to me about reading up on these whistling at night is bad, like, traditions kind of stuff. A lot of them have theories that it began, like most myths do, as cautionary tales for children during times when there were conflicts between tribes, or, you know, resources were scarce and stuff like that. Because if you were whistling, people could figure out where you were. And so it was that whole, like, don't whistle because you know, it's easier to tell children don't whistle because the boogeyman will get you than don't whistle because our enemies will kidnap you, kind of thing. And so there were some theories that I read. There's nothing concrete about that, but that there were theories that that was kind of where it started. And I would be really interested to know about these the whistling language communities, if they had any traditions about whistling at night. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
That would take a lot more research. A ton of digging, which we don't have time to do, obviously. But that would be super interesting to know if they had any of those kinds of traditions, or if those superstitions just didn't exist at all because whistling was such a big part of their tradition.
I know Turkey, of course, has the, you know, don't whistle after dark because you're calling the devil, and Kuskoy is in northern Turkey. But I didn't really see anything specifically for that particular area.
But also, the devil is more of a modern addition to a lot of religions. Because, like, dark spirits and stuff have existed for a long time, but the devil is very much a Judeo-Christian, Abrahamic religion concept that didn't exist everywhere in the world for a long time.
And then further down my rabbit hole, I found that there is a created language, and I had never heard of it. It's called Sol Re Sol, and it is it's a universal musical language created by Francois Soudre in 1827. It reached its peak popularity in 1902, and it still exists. Unfortunately, it does not have a lot of users. Like, Esperanto took off really well and still has a really strong following. But it uses basically the musical scale that most of us are familiar with, the do, re, mi, fa, so, la. And then in America, it's T. In a lot of other places, it's C, with each note being a syllable, which you build words of 1 to 5 syllables for. It can be, of course, hummed, played, whistled. They have hand signals for it, similar to sign language. And basically, so my name, Joy, is Sol, Si, Re in Sol, Re, Sol.
I love that.
I love languages that have really weird formats like that. It's super cool.
Yeah, you could effectively write secret letters to each other on staffs and make it a like bardic thieves sort of thing, which I was fascinated with.
Oh my gosh, I'm reading the Wikipedia article about it right now. It is fascinating. I love this so much.
And there is a gentleman who, unfortunately, I didn't write his name down, but I think if you Google Sol Re Sol translator, you'll hit his page. He's got a bunch of links, and he's basically saved a bunch of stuff that was on old bulletin boards and old chat rooms and stuff like that. But he's built a translator so that you can type in. It doesn't do personal names unless, like mine, where it means something else.
Yeah.
But it will translate. You can translate like sentences and things like that. And I did it. It was pretty cool.
I'm gonna have to look that up, and I'm gonna be spending so much time playing with that. You guys have no idea.
Yeah. It would be really fun for a D&D game.
Oh yeah. It would.
Oh no. Underwater whale songs?
Yeah.
What? Okay. Sorry, that's a whole rabbit hole that I do not have time to go down.
I spent way too much time there. But it was very cool.
So, whistling at night is bad, except when it's not. And whistling languages are so cool.
Takeaway.
That's my takeaway. But I do have some really cool science stuff.
I have news as well, so.
Ooh. Oh boy.
So okay. Nice. Joy, go ahead and do your news, because I don't want to like take your news if you have the same stuff I do.
Okay. So as of today, Google released a new update that allows you to search the song by merely singing, humming, or whistling the melody.
But don't whistle it at night, guys.
Good.
That's so cool though. I love that. Oh my gosh. How many people are going to finally figure out that the song is called Sandstorm?
I don't remember the words, but it goes, do, 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 do. Yeah, that's me.
Da, 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 da.
But it'll really help people, especially for looking for orchestral pieces or some violin solo work. So you can now hum or sing or attempt to make noises, and Google will try to tell you what it thinks it is.
I mean, granted, Google was actually pretty decent at figuring out songs by you typing them in if you did punctuation correctly.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because that's how I learned what the little fwag in G minor was by Bach. Because I was like, I love this melody. I don't know what it is. Google, what's this melody? And had to try and type it in. And it finally found it for me. So
it's actually quite impressive, I won't lie.
Right, it is smarter.
What else you got for us, Joy?
That was the news that I had.
Okay. I didn't have that news, and that is fantastic news. Mine is a little more on the not spooky, but conspiracy theory sides of things. Earlier in September 27th, this article was published. They have been doing more research. They've run the numbers and found that it is mathematically possible for non-paradoxical time travel to exist.
Yes.
And I think that's terrifying.
Big spoopy.
Big spoopy. Which lends credence to all those photos of, like, that time travel guy. Like, because we were always like, you can't time travel. You'll change the past. It'll make a paradox. And they're like, meh, no, probably wouldn't.
And I think everyone's going to try. And this is going to be a disaster. Which explains 2020.
I was literally just about to say, I'm pretty sure that's like a very good, like, framework for viewing everything of 2020.
This actually happened earlier this year, and I just missed it because I was avoiding all news stories. So I'm sorry that I missed this because it is huge. In Antarctica, they believe that they have found strange particles that are evidence of a parallel universe that is running in the upside down. So it is basically running backwards in time compared to our universe.
Oh, that's fun.
So they have found what they think is the upside down, which, I mean, why not? It's 2020.
Chalk one more down for apocalypse, bingo.
They actually found this in 2016, but it's taken them this long to fully research things. So... I will post the article if anybody wants to read it. It's a lot of scientific-y stuff. You know, the particles was exploding from the ground instead of bearing down from above. It wasn't working with gravity correctly. It was really fascinating.
That's not terrifying at all.
Absolutely not. I mean, we already found a cave bear. It's fine.
We found
an unknown species of pterosaur that's so large. It's fine. This is fine, guys. But my
distracted from Amber. Nothing's going wrong. Nothing.
But my most excited news story, and this is like bordering on just nerding out news story. An engineer has created the world's first real life retractable lightsaber.
The plasma saber, I saw that. Yes. Oh, I love their channel.
I did not hear about that.
It is a functional lightsaber using propane gas to create a retractable plasma beam that burns around 4,000 degrees Celsius.
It's a thing of beauty.
That's amazing.
It is beautiful. Oh my god, there's cats hissing at each other. Stop. It is gorgeous. It is custom built. They had to build a backpack that actually like puts the propane into it because it can't like self sustain.
Yeah, put propane and oxygen. Yeah,
and they use magnetic fields, I believe.
I'm looking at pictures of it right now.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes, I will also post this story on the Facebook because whoo.
Yeah, Hacksmith. They're so cool. Their channel is amazing.
Yes. Yes. So, and they believe that they can create different colors of lightsaber beams by adding different metals and ions and stuff like that. So if they add sodium chloride, it can become yellow. Boric acid turns it green. Strontium chloride turns it red.
I'm delighted, it's guys.
So cool, guys. I'm so excited. This is like the first thing in 2020 that I've been super excited about.
I'm watching the it's new a thing of beauty right now. Ugh.
Yeah, I'm on their on their Patreon because they do a lot of really cool builds. So they actually released the both the cutting video and the creation video earlier to their Patreons, and I was just it's beautiful.
It's fair. So cool.
This is something cool. I will be following from now on. These guys sound super rad. Oh, that's cool.
In local non-underground files related news, though. If you live in the Tri-Cities or thereabout, or come to Adventures Underground, who is our main sponsor and host for this show, the Caterpillar Cafe is actually now serving paninis.
Paninis.
Delicious, delicious breads and sandwiches. And we have beer on tap now.
Beer and cider on tap.
Yeah. Beer and cider on tap. And I'm really excited about it, so I thought I'd give it a shout-out. I know that it's not something we normally do on this show, but considering that regular AU Radio is taking a break, I figured that we could, like, plug the store a little bit, because, guys, I'm so excited for the new seating area. I'm so excited for all the changes to the menu.
We have so many new things.
So many new things, and I just want everybody to know about it, because I'm so excited.
I've been having way too many of their sandwiches. They're too good. It's a problem.
I'm going to get in trouble at work because I'm going to be like, I really want some hard cider like right now and I could just go buy some.
No. It is a problem.
It's a problem.
Tis indeed. Between that and the pumpkin beer, everybody's screwed.
Everybody's screwed. Well, I had a lot of fun, you guys. I learned some really cool stuff tonight that I was not expecting to learn. Learned about more about whistling languages, and I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, that's my favorite rabbit hole so far.
Oh gosh,
I love languages, guys. So cool. I'm sorry.
We will be coming back for the end of the month to do a Samhain/spooky episode about, you know, Halloween and different holidays and things like that. And then we will be taking a break until January while we deal with the retail. Onslaught of retail at in the holidays. Oh, pray for our souls! So make sure you tune in next week to catch our, you know, farewell to 2020 episode. And we'll catch you next time on the Underground Files.
You've been listening to AU Radio Underground Files. Music is provided by Cubby, purpleplanet.com, and bensound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio Podcast is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.
If you'd like to contact the show, follow us on Twitter at AU_radio, Facebook at AU Radio Podcast, Instagram at AU.radio, or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the shows on AU Radio by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Network. Find us on Patreon as AU Radio at Adventures Underground. You can help us create this podcast and soon several others with as little as a dollar a month. Thanks for listening. We'll